alone in the open air, 5 feet above the ground. Each crew member found him or herself likewise isolated from the others and suspended in space. This illusion was produced by the hull's optical scanning system, which filtered out unnecessary detail and projected a three-dimensional image of the external environment directly onto the interior surface of the helmet visors. She keyed her battlesuit comlink to the driver.
Start the mission clock, Miro. Done.
Miro throttled up the turbines. As the hum grew louder, the chair Dreda sat in began to move. It accelerated rapidly until it was flying over the ground. To her right, the details of the Slake City massif stretched and blurred. G-force drove her deep into the counter seat, but there was no accompanying sensation of air pressure. It was the only flaw in the elaborate computer simulation. If she'd really been strapped unprotected to a rocket-powered chair, the wind would have been a tangible, buffeting force against the front of her body. Ahead, she could make out the lakebed landing zone and the six black gyroplanes on standby there.
Airborne units, proceed to the staging area.
The VTOL attack aircraft immediately lifted off and swung toward the mountains to the southwest, strung out in a quarter-mile skirmish line. Dreda continued westward, rushing across the flat pill dirt, leaving Slake City behind. The other WAGs ran on either side of her in loose flying V formation. Their speed over ground was 140 miles per hour. Dreda felt some vibration in the pit of her stomach and her feet, but it was disconnected from the images inside her visor, which moved only when she turned her head. The formation slowed to make the turn south at Old Iasipa Road. The undivided pavement had vanished long ago, but the roadbed was still there, covered by drifts of sand, salt, and dust. It ran straight as a laser pulse for 20 miles. As they approached the slight bend in the road, where the pre-dark hamlet of Iasipa had been, Dreda ordered the vehicles cloaked. This was accomplished by reducing the side-to-side distance between the WAGs to a few feet, and then electrostatically charging the hulls, which redirected most of the dust cloud they were raising aft, and made it jet forward from under their front bumpers, creating a roiling, onrushing wall of dirt that preceded and entirely enveloped them. Inside her visor, Dreda could see nothing but swirling beige.
Damn!
Miro and the other sisters were driving blind at identical high speeds, maintaining tight formation over broken ground using battlesuit setlink intel and helmet simulacra for steering. Dreda switched her visor screen to monitor what they were viewing. Along the sides of the green field were a dozen inset windows with numbers rapidly scrolling up or down. There were complex nuke turbine function and tank temperature indicators. Other windows displayed the vehicle's true course over ground, in latitude and longitude, and its true speed over ground. There were flashing proximity warnings about the vehicles on either side, in feet. The distance to the target was shown in yards, and falling rapidly. In the center of the screen were eight WAG-shaped lime-green blips in a sideways row. Beneath the shifting blips, a shades of green, satellite-generated contour map of the terrain unrolled wildly. Only one of the blips on Miro's screen ran inside a set of parallel lines. These boundaries indicated her vehicle's computer-assigned course. The paired lines were constantly moving as the computer adjusted for the deflection of the irregular terrain and driver error and deflection in the seven other vehicles. As Miro kept the blip within the course boundaries, her decision time was measured in fractions of a second. Allowable real-world error before catastrophe was measured in inches. Dreda switched screens again, calling up the biometric readouts of her WAG squad. Her heart rate and Miro's were holding steady at 45 beats per minute. The men's were four times that, and their blood pressures were spiking. She quickly scanned each trooper's current video input. None of them was observing the driver's screen. They were either beiged out or offline, presumably staring at the red gloom of the cargo bay. Dreda tried to imagine how Miro's screen would look to them. Pure chaos. And information and threat overload. Their lives in the hands of a gene-spliced maniac. Dreda couldn't see their eyes, but it amused her to think they were all shut tight. The Level 4 procedure that she and her officers had endured had changed more than their external physique, their fat metabolism, and resting heart rates. It had expanded and fine-tuned their biological systems to match the extreme limits of the battlesuit's cyber capabilities. Something the male physiology, gene-doctored or not, could never achieve. Their increased numbers of neurons allowed them to intake and process information 100 times faster than the men. As Dreda understood the science, There were built-in bioengineering limits to each of the sexes, based on the amount of body space and chemistry devoted to their different reproductive functions. In the case of females, much more of their capacity, hormonally, metabolically, neurologically, was taken up by these duties. If the biochemical obligations of motherhood were removed, there was room for the system to change and grow. On the other hand, men's reproductive functions took up very little of their body's overall capacity, so removing it had no effect on potential growth. Evolutionarily speaking, the male of the species was already maxed out. When Dreda uplinked her visor to the infrared image of the target compound, she saw human forms running. Now that the dust cloud was visible to them, the Shadow Worlders were taking up defensive positions inside the fenced perimeter. On their part, it had to be a precaution. They didn't know what the approaching cloud meant, and they weren't taking any chances. The important thing was they weren't abandoning the compound in droves, because they controlled the high ground from well-positioned defensive hard sites with lots of conventional weapons. They believed they were invulnerable. The function of the dust cloak was to maintain the illusion as long as possible. Slaves were more profitable, caught in large bunches. Dreda panned back for a broader infrared view of the kill zone. The exhaust ports of the heavily armed gyroplanes registered as six bright spots sweeping around the western flank of Mount Deseret, closing on the compound from the north. It was time for the ground units to uncloak, and she snapped out the order. As the WAGs burst through the face of the electrostatic dust cloud, the compound's 12-foot-high wire perimeter fence appeared out of nothing, directly in front of them. Beyond it was the broad parking lot, and on the other side of it, the main complex that snuggled up against the foot of the mountain. The eight landships hit the fence at the same instant, flattening it and twisting it under their huge wheels. They roared into the parking lot. A fusillade of hostile fire zinged at them from all sides. The clatter of gunshots and the ping whine of bullets deflecting off her WAG's EM shield was so loud it forced Greta to turn down the audio in her battlesuit.
Silly fools.
When she activated the WAG's weapons pods, which were located on either side of the roof, two joysticks popped out of the dashboard in front of her. As her gauntleted hands closed on the no-slip grips, a ring and crosshair sight appeared in the center of her helmet visor. Her targets, human-shaped figures in lime green, scattered to either side as the WAG continued to rumble up the slope. Greta flipped off the grip safeties with her thumbs.
Time for a little education.
Each of the joysticks operated its own cannon pod. As she moved her hands apart, the lone crosshair ring blurred, divided, and became two. She simultaneously tracked a pair of men running in opposite directions. One was scrambling out of a foxhole hacked in the asphalt on her left, the other high-kicked to the right as he abandoned a sandbagged, burned-out hulk of the vehicle. With the computer target locks engaged, the sprinting figures turned red, and she jiggled the firing buttons. Green lances of light stabbed through both runners. Neither completed another step. Foxhole man fell in four pieces, sliced cleanly through the chest and both arms above the elbow by a single burst of pure energy. His transected parts landed in a jumbled heap. The other man took the laser slash at waist height. The emerald light separated his torso from everything below his hips. It was a grievous mortal wound, but not immediately so. Though the man had been chopped in half, there was no blood. The laser sliced and cauterized at the same time. Rearing up from the pavement with undamaged arms, he seemed to recognize the severed legs under his chin as his own. Frantically clawing, he tried to drag himself away. He was all in red. The target lock had him. She tapped the right firing button again. She sawed him neatly lengthwise, from the top of his head to his torso stump. The smoking halves of him flopped apart, like a cleaver-struck apple.
Beautiful.
All around, the gunners and the other WAGs were likewise selecting individual running targets and chopping them to pieces. Dreda's visor compensated for the interlacing, intense bursts of light. In the real world, those flashes of green were blinding. They cooked the very air, as they cooked human flesh and bone. The attack was intended to produce maximum terror, and it was having the desired effect. Instead of holding their ground, the Shadow Worlders were already starting to fall back, allowing themselves to be herded toward the main building. Her body in perfect sync with the WAG's fire control system, Dreda unleashed a furious two-handed attack. Tickling the firing buttons, She struck red targets not with one pulse, but with 20, sectioning the human forms in as many pieces. To her, it seemed as if the running figures were moving in slow motion. To the troopers in the jump seats behind her, it was just the opposite. Everything was free-spooling at triple speed.